Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, a continuation of the ongoing special in-depth investigative report, Vaccinations, a Second Opinion, Part 3 today. Over the last week, I've had a few physicians who've contacted me asking the basic question, what's the issue? In fact, I was walking down the street 2 days ago, and a man came up to me and said, I just heard you show them vaccine. What's the issue? You know, they're safe, they're effective. What are you kind of roiling the water? Why? And who cares? The idea in many people's mind is that there's really no controversy surrounding the safety and efficacy of vaccines. We simply accept it. And I ask two of those physicians who I communicated with, what if all the women currently taking human growth hormone or hormone replacement therapy for menopause, postmenopausal conditions had asked the same question? Is there a controversy? Is there a challenge? If that was the case, then we would have had millions of women not exposed to the hormone replacement therapy that increases the risk of stroke, does not fundamentally change their overall health, and increase the risk of cancer. In fact, most of the health-conscious feminists in the United States oppose synthetic hormone replacement therapy. I would like to share just some of the, just possibly 10 to 15% of the articles that I have received before getting into the heart of my main report today, to show you that it is important that we know what's going on in the area of vaccination. For example, this comes from Michael Elner, and it deals with the vaccine refusal may cause New York to take children. Today, 77 middle schoolers will be yanked from home and taken into custody by New York State unless their parents agree to vaccinate them for a disease usually caught by drug abusers or sexually promiscuous individuals. And here is the full story. Vaccine refusal may cause these kids to end up in a difficult situation. On October 10th, students at Utica were sent home for failing to get hepatitis B vaccines by the state deadline. Parents were warned the children would be turned over to Child Protection Services for neglect if they were still without vaccinations in 2 weeks. Quote, this is Hillary Care coming home to roost in New York, unquote, said Dr. Jane Oriand, MD, Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. President Mrs. Clinton's 1992 campaign pledge to create the Vaccine for Children program was to become the first domestic policy initiative of the administration. It was designed as their first shot to pass the Health Security Act. Quote, their campaign to pass this vaccine for children was based on creating a false crisis by claiming that millions of children would be exposed to risk of disease without a government program, unquote. Quote, this vaccine is a potential death sentence for some children, said Dr. Oriand. Government studies show that children under the age of 14 are 300% more likely to die or suffer adverse reactions after receiving hepatitis B vaccine than to catch the disease itself, unquote. Hepatitis B is primarily an adult disease, usually spread by multiple sexual partners, drug abuse, or an occupation with exposure to blood. Children are at very, very low risk of exposure, unless the pregnant mother is infected. The school district will lose a substantial amount of state funding if students do not comply with the vaccine mandate. Quote, we refuse to let that happen, said State District Physician Mark Zongron. Quote, apparently Dr. Zongron is more interested in protecting his employer's budget than protecting the children under his care. And Mrs. Clinton's care, more about her vision of socialized medicine. It's obscene to seize a child and force him to be the custody of strangers just because his parents refuse medical treatment they think is unnecessary or even dangerous, unquote. Dr. Rand concludes, parents, not Mrs. Clinton's village government bureaucrats, should make decisions about their children's medical care. We urge an immediate repeal of all vaccine mandates, unquote. Now, the likelihood is that those parents who have decided that they do not want their children vaccinated with hepatitis B are doing so in a very conscientious manner. My experience has been that parents who do not want compulsory vaccination have taken the time to study the literature, inform themselves, challenge preconceived notions, and have decided that they do not want their child being in any way an experimental model for the state. Instead of respecting those parents and protecting the children, the bureaucrats come in and say, if you don't do it, we're going to take your children away. So just remember this. Mrs. Clinton is allowing your child to be taken from you if you do not go by her very, very unscientific principle of giving everyone vaccines. That's an outrage, and one that her little quaint, politically contrived village of people. Well, what kind of village? Village of the damned? Where is freedom of choice? It does not exist in Clinton land. And unfortunately, that has been true more often than not. More government, more agencies, bigger agencies, more control over our rights. And the average person has not understood how this impacts upon them. What you should allow the state representatives to know is that the state law, in very clear and unambiguous language, states that you have a right to refuse any vaccine if the physician, your primary physician, determines that it is not in your child's best interest, or if you have a religious concern, you are have a religious exemption. That's the law. And I believe that we should have attorneys in this audience begin to contact some of the advocacy groups to challenge these mandates and to repeal them, take on the state and sue this particular doctor who heads the school district there, sue the school district and sue the state. That's the only way that this will come to a head where then proper and intelligent scientific data can be presented showing that vaccines are neither predictive in safety or in efficacy. Otherwise, we have mindless bureaucrats following dictates without thinking. Another article. This comes from the Evening Times of Scotland, October 20th, 2000. It's an article by Alan McDermid, and it says, parents risk losing children over MMR complaints. I'll quote, parents who claim their children have developed autism as a result of being given the controversial MMR vaccine risk having them taken away by social workers. MSP will be told next week. A leading autism expert said yesterday that an estimated 200 such families in the United Kingdom, including Scotland, had lost their children after being accused of Mumenchonson syndrome by proxy. Dr. Paul Shattuck, director of the Autism Research Unit at Sunderland University, said the court orders had been carried out under cover of draconian gagging orders framed ostensibly to safeguard the identity of the children. He will lay his allegations before MSP on Wednesday at the launch of the Scottish Parliament cross-party group on autistic spectrum disorders. Quote, there have been cases where people say their children are autistic and blame the vaccine. Then social services come and says the child is not autistic and you've made him what they call Mumenchonson, and they take the child away. The term Mumenchonson syndrome by proxy was coined to describe parents who subject their children to unnecessary medical care on the pretext of bogus illnesses. Dr. Shattuck said it was now being used as a cover-up over the suspected link between the combined measles, mumps, rubella vaccine introduced in 1988 and a distinctive combination of autism and intestinal disorders described nearly 3 years ago by Dr. Andrew Wakefield of the Royal Free Hospital in London, in which he attributed to excess strain on the immune system caused by giving all three vaccines in one jab. It has precipitated demands by parents to have each vaccine administered singly with an interlude between each, a move resisted by the government. Quote, it's down to pride. The medical establishment can't admit it's being wrong, unquote, said Dr. Shattuck. Quote, something is going on, whether it's vaccines, pesticides, plasticizers, and food or whatever. The research the government has provided in defense of MRI is flawed, unquote. What does it mean? Well, in the simplest sense, it means that if you live in the United Kingdom, if you live in Wales and England, Scotland, and your child has a vaccine, and if you suggest that the vaccine cause adverse side effects in your child, they can come and take your child away from you, claiming the child doesn't have autism, and you're just making it up. So much for draconian orders. And what you see in Europe frequently is a prelude to what you'll see in the United States. This comes from UPI, Lansing, Michigan, September 29, 2000. BioPort Corporation, the only producer of anthrax vaccine used by the U.S. military, Thursday said it was shocked an autopsy linked an employee's death to the controversial vaccine. A company spokesman said Wednesday's statement by the Ionia County Medical Examiner was the first time in 30 years the vaccine had been connected to a death. More than 2.5 million doses of the vaccine have been administered. Richard Dunn, 61, worked for BioPort for 2 years and its predecessor, state-owned Michigan Biologic Products Institute, for 6 years, caring for and monitoring test animals. He was given the vaccine, the same used by the military to protect soldiers from deadly biological agent, 11 times, last time in April. He died July 7th. The Lansing State Journal said Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Robert Joyce said the autopsy showed Dan had, quote, inflammatory response to the vaccine that caused his entire body to swell. There were no signs of anthrax in his body. Well, that is a case. Now, that's one case of anthrax vaccine as someone who worked with it. There is also a resolution in New Jersey, and this is a concurrent resolution concerning legislative review of proposed Department of Health and Senior Services regulations pursuant to Article 5, Section 4, Paragraph 6 of the Constitution of the State of New Jersey, where they want to have a review of the vaccines to make it even more compulsory for children. I've reread the entire piece of legislation. It is draconian, and it's going to hurt kids more than it will help them. Not unusual in New Jersey. But parents aren't aware of it. Your doctor's not aware of it. It's just one more thing legislators do when they have nothing more important. This comes from the BBC. And babies might be vaccinated against rotavirus. Scientists fear that a vaccine for a virus that kills thousands of children worldwide every year may lead to childhood diabetes. Rotavirus infection can lead to a diarrheal illness, which is extremely dangerous to the young, weak, and otherwise vulnerable. Teams around the world are working on a vaccine for the virus, with some degree of success. However, Dr. Mauro Honeyman from the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute of Medical Research in Melbourne, Australia, said there's a possible link between rotavirus infection and type 1 diabetes, which can leave a patient reliant on insulin injections for the rest of their life. Now, keep in mind, this is going to be given to kids who already have, for the most part in developing countries, highly compromised immune systems. And it's not certain that it protects them in the first place, but there's a high probability it's going to cause disease in the second place. This comes from Van Oort, Tennessee. The Food and Drug Administration seized hundreds of doses of prescription drugs and vaccines from White Air's laboratories shipping center, citing violations of federal quality standards. Although the FDA did not spell out the violations, Thursday a recent inspection report cited concerns over sterilization procedures. The product seed included vaccines against tetanus and diphtheria. And so here we have. Did you know about it? Nope. The Secrets of Contaminated Vaccines, Part 2, Clinical Conditions. Atypical cytopathic stealth-adapted viruses have been cultured from blood samples received from veterans diagnosed as having Gulf War illness. Positive cultures have also been obtained from their family members, of many of whom also became sick. 2. Stealth-adapted viruses are currently being introduced into the nation's blood supply and were probably present in the gamma globulin shots routinely received by deployed personnel. It is known that the processing of gamma globulin at that time was insufficient even to inactivate hepatitis C virus. 3. Stealth-adapted viruses, that means man-made viruses that were used in biological warfare, can contain both viral and bacterial sequences These novel life forms have been termed vitra. Efforts to produce chimeric viral bacterial agents were presumptively undertaken by the military and may have set the stage for the evolution of Viteria. Quote, the son of a married physician couple who served in the Gulf developed a neurological illness. Both parents had begun to experience depression, personality changes, and fatigue resulting in disruption of their marriage. For over 7 months, the child's abnormal behavior was attributed to his, quote, acting out in response to his parents' impending divorce. Even when organic disease was identified, a routine neurological examination was essentially normal. Both MRI and two subsequent brain biopsies were grossly abnormal. Both mother and child were stealth virus cultural positive. The child showed a partial response to antiviral therapy, but subsequently died from cerebral herniation. 5. Stealth viruses have been cultured from veterans with malignant diseases, including a particularly aggressive form of brain cancer. These individuals also experienced the gradual deterioration of their personalities, leading to marital separation more than a year before the tumor was discovered. 6. Stealth-adapted viruses can induce neurologic illness in cats, and these agents are likely to be infectious for both domestic and farm animals. As a colleague once said, quote, you have proved your point, John. It's up to them to disprove you, but they would rather simply avoid the issue and hope you go away, unquote. Not being able to do that, the CCID is intent on pursuing its interest in stealth viruses as a cause of Gulf War illness. We are encouraged by the finding that the replication of a prototype stealth virus is probably being driven by cell migration regulatory molecules, termed chemokines, a listing of various herbal and proprietary medicines that can inhibit one or more of the complex stages leading to chemokine production has been developed. This is merely a report talking about what happens when, it's from Dr. John Martin, what happens to those soldiers who were in the Gulf. And what we're now seeing is that historically, I mean real historically, clear back to the Second World War, service personnel were routinely used as, in effect, human guinea pigs without their knowledge or their consent. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions. So why change it? We've used population groups in cities without letting them know. We've used the military and prisoners. And so a perfect way of testing one of their stealth viruses was in our own personnel. They've always been disposable, unfortunately. And the history of having used our military for these secret experiments is legion. There is plenty of evidence that this is not a unique and isolated event. And Dr. John Martin did an in-depth review of this. And he says in his review, one of society's highest obligations is the protection of its children. Vaccine programs provide a proven method of childhood disease prevention. The safety of such programs have been entrusted to vaccine manufacturers and to government regulatory agencies. Although widely touted as a major medical triumph of the 20th century, the development of viral vaccines has elements of less than stellar performance. The discovery in 1960 of live SV40 virus contamination in formalin-treated poliovirus vaccines produced in kidney cell cultures from rhesus monkeys did not lead to an immediate recall of the contaminated vaccines. Rather, the production method was switched to the use of kidney cells from the much less well-characterized African green monkeys. This switch in monkey species was soon followed by the decision to forego formalin inactivation by using a weakened, attenuated live strain of poliovirus. Persisting concerns regarding contaminating viruses in the live poliovirus led in 1972 to a joint study between the vaccine manufacturer and the United States Food and Drug Administration. Kidney cultures from all 12 monkeys tested grew African green monkey simian cytomegalovirus. Only four of the simian cytomegalovirus isolates were detectable using the regular methods for viral detection. No changes in testing methodology were imposed, nor was the scientific community alerted to these findings. An excuse that was subsequently offered was that all such information after the study was deemed to be proprietary. Now, what's this mean? It means that even a proponent, and he is certainly, Dr. John Martin, is a proponent of vaccines, has shown that when they found out that the kidney cultures of monkeys they were using to make the poliovirus was contaminated with a cytomegalovirus and a SV40 virus, simian virus 40, meaning the 40th strain of that virus detected, instead of doing a recall, instead of informing everyone who had received the vaccine that, hey, you may have cytomegalovirus, and that may hurt you, may kill you, they simply covered it up, saying couldn't release the information because it was the manufacturer's exclusive right. Just a few more, and I'll get to my major report. This is something I thought would be a... This was a letter I received from Lisa Mitchell. As an internet project manager in telecommunications, I'm familiar with the symbiotic business relationship of industry and government. I understand the dynamics of profit, getting new products to market as quickly as possible, negotiating value-added partnerships, and above all, the potential for ethics to be sublimated to the bottom line. As a mother, I didn't want to believe that the same business practices applied in medicine, because that would have meant accepting the possibility that my child was perceived first and foremost as a target market. A new mother is particularly vulnerable, and most of us harbor a trust bordering on reverence for the medical community, believing its members to be omnipotent and above reproach. When I held my baby in my arms for the first time and understood the magnitude of my responsibility, my faith in medicine translated into an implicit contract with my doctor. My job is to love him, your job is to keep him well. And my baby was well until 1998, when at 2 years of old age, he was diagnosed with autism. When I read statistics in the U.S. Department of Education that autism in school-aged children had increased 556% in 5 years, skyrocketing past any other disability, I was shocked and horrified. But I trusted what my doctors told me, that the increase was due to better diagnostic skills, not to any real increase in autism. It took 2 years for that trust to erode, chipped away by increasing evidence that business motives had mandated my child's health. I learned that a target new investigation was underway and that my child, like all other child, was a part of that. And that the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control, who vote on U.S. immunization policies, despite a web of conflict of interest, panel members who own stock in vaccine makers receive research grants from those same companies or even own vaccine patents themselves. I found out the vaccines given to my child had a target new unsafe amounts of mercury contained in the preservative thimerosal, a fact that led to the introduction this year of new thimerosal-free vaccines. I learned that last year, a rotavirus vaccine was rushed to the market too soon without enough research and had to be suspended by federal health officials because children were experiencing life-threatening bowel obstructions. But it was during a conference this June that I crossed over to the other side, from conventional mom to vaccine reform advocate, and began sounding more and more like Mudler in The X-Files, saying to anyone who would listen, the truth is out there. Unquote. Just imagine the frustration and the anger of someone who realizes one day that virtually everything they've been told is a lie. This comes from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. A respiratory virus that strikes hardest at young children and the elderly in nursing homes has lost a preliminary bout with a two-fisted enemy, genetically modified cherry tomatoes containing an edible vaccine. The match took place in a lab test at the University of Illinois. The greenhouse-grown tomatoes carry genetic coating of a fruit-specific promoter that targets a major protein on the outside envelope of the respiratory syncytial virus. Now, what's this mean? What this means is they're now putting vaccines into our food. Therefore, when you eat the food, you're going to end up having this vaccine in your body. But think of that. Every time you eat the food, you're going to re-vaccinate yourself. What if you were, in this case, it was cherry tomatoes. What if you ate cherry tomatoes every day? And you start thinking, my goodness, is everyone asleep at the wheel? How can a responsible group of individuals suggest that someone should be vaccinated every single day of their lives? By eating not just one food, now everyone wants to get into the business of putting genetically modified vaccines into our food supply. This comes from the Spectrum. Not the same publication it was under Roger Windsor, unfortunately, but still containing some valuable insights. Quote, "The mandatory vaccinations to which we subject American children are a peculiar tradition, combining medicine and the blind justice of the law. In all 50 states, law requires that children receive as many as 22 immunizations before enrolling in school at age 5 or 6. Though most states provide for parents to claim religious exemptions, and some even allow for philosophical exemption, the American medical, educational, and legal systems are focusing on enforcing universal vaccine for, quote, the public health. But is the short-sighted legal system fostering and compelling a medical practice that is harming the children? The evidence is mounting that the decades-long government-sponsored drive to inject all preschool children with a full panoply of vaccines may not be as safe and effective as billed. The heart of the problem may lie in the paradox of compelling parents to consume these particular medicines. If parents had to choose whether to immunize their children, they'd learn all they could about the medicine's efficacy and demand the questions about the drug safety be addressed. Currently, most parents passively accept their doctors' and government's assurances that the vaccines are safe and inject their children as a necessity. New evidence shows that parents' confidence in these reassurances may be misplaced. Recent studies have shown that immunizations may be at the root of the population's alarming increase in autism, ADHD, and development delays, asthma, and eczema. New studies have made a connection between the increased vaccination and rheumatic disease, lupus, erythematosus, and allergies. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin and Madison injected hamsters with outer surface protein A, a component of Borrelia, the bacteria thought to cause Lyme disease. The bacteria are used on the basis of a vaccine, and the protein remains a part of the medicine. The researchers later infected the hamsters with the actual Borrelia bacteria and found that half of the hamsters developed a serious, destructive form of arthritis. The researchers were quick to point out that there would have been no reports of humans developing arthritis from Lyme's disease vaccine, unquote. Well, that's not true. I know many people who have been vaccinated for Lyme's disease who do have arthritis. This comes from the Townsend Letter for Doctors, much more professional in its positioning on this, and something that can be taken. And this is important. This quote, hepatitis B vaccine linked to autoimmune rheumatoid disease. The rise of autoimmune immunity following hepatitis B immunization in school children and adults has become a major public health concern. This data was released on the 62nd annual meeting of the American College of Rheumatology in San Diego. In October, the Ministry of Health in France suspended routine hepatitis B immunization of school children while continuing hepatitis B immunization at birth. The reason for this decision was reportedly the increased risk of autoimmune diseases that has been associated with the vaccine when it is given starting at school age or later. The data from France links hepatitis B immunization to both the development of newly diagnosed cases of autoimmune rheumatoid arthritis disease as well as the exacerbation of previously diagnosed cases that were in remission. This finding is supported by data from Canada published in September, which linked immunization against hepatitis B to the development of autoimmune rheumatoid disease in firefighters. Dr. John Clayson, MD, an immunologist at Clayson Immunotherapies, has found that immunization starting after 2 months of life was associated with an increased risk of autoimmunity compared to starting at birth. Data from a small study published in the United States government appears to support his data and show that when hepatitis B immunizations was given starting after 2 months of life, it was associated with a doubling of the risk of diabetes. The concept of giving a child an immunization against a disease they have virtually no risk for is absurd. The only risk factor for acquiring hepatitis B is through blood contact. This is primarily through transfusions and sexual contact. Infants rarely have either of these risk factors, yet the conventional medical community persists in recommending them. I am glad to see some hard data in a respected medical community which confirms the danger of these vaccines. And separately, and finally, the Hib vaccine causes diabetes. Data released from the CDC in December shows a substantial decline in childhood meningitis, which has been attributed to administering the childhood hemophilus vaccine. The reports, however, fail to include the potential downside. While prevention of infection is an admirable goal, the data indicates that the hemophilus vaccine may be causing more harm than good. Dr. J. Bart Clayson published papers linking immunization against hemophilus and other diseases to the development of insulin-dependent diabetes. Dr. Clayson's work found that immunization starting after 2 months of life was associated with an increased risk of autoimmunity compared to starting at birth. The hemophilus vaccine may prevent 600 deaths a year in the United States, according to the CDC data. However, according to his data, it may cause 4,000 cases of insulin-dependent diabetes, and diabetes is just one potential adverse event. Children die from diabetes. The disease definitely shortens one's life, and according to current practices, vaccine manufacturers are generally only required to test vaccines for their ability to cause adverse events during the 3 weeks after the vaccine is given. If a vaccine does not cause patients to have noticeable adverse events in the first 3 weeks after it's given, then the vaccine is labeled as safe and approved for widespread use. Work by Clayson and others has shown that when vaccinated individuals are followed for years after being immunized, they seem to be at a large increased risk of serious immunological disorders like diabetes. Unquote. I'm Gary Nall. Today, giving you a little background on some of the issues that are being raised concerning vaccines. In a moment, I'm going to talk about the shaken baby syndrome, or is it really an adverse vaccine report? I'll also tell you about the experts knew of suspect polio jabs, but held it back, did not tell people. And then I'll go into an in-depth description of MMR vaccine, live or oral polio vaccines, inactivated polio vaccines, the hemophilus influenza vaccine, which many people are going to be getting now, the hepatitis B vaccine, and the chickenpox vaccine. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
And good afternoon once again. You are tuned to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. We're taking this brief pause in natural living in our the last three days of fundraising. Gary will be on with Natural Living for 2 hours today, tomorrow, and Friday, and that will conclude Natural Living's offering for this fundraising drive, their responsibilities for this fundraising drive. And you have done very, very well. All of the listeners have responded extremely well during this fund drive, and we believe that you will do the same thing this afternoon.
Just 3 days to go.
We just would like to thank the New Era Cafe that provided a very fine lunch to the staff and volunteers here at WBAI. They're located at 495 Broadway in New York City, and as always, the Westerly Organic Market at 913 8th Avenue, and Urban Organics in Brooklyn, New York, for providing fresh organic fruit early in the morning. Every morning we have fresh organic fruit for the staff and volunteers here at WBAI, so I'd like to thank them very, very much for their help and for their support. And we hope that we can maintain your support and continue to have you call at this radio station and support Natural Living. Natural Living with Gary Nall is usually heard on these airwaves Monday through Friday, 12 to 1 o'clock without commercial interruption. And we take a 60-second break in between, and then we are back to programming. We extend it a little bit longer during the fundraising drives up until 2 o'clock, a little past 2 o'clock, and to try to raise funds for WBAI. Now, what we have to offer you this afternoon, and it's a thank you to you for supporting this radio station, for supporting Natural Living. Gary Nall has put together, has written a brand new book. It's out from Seven Stories Press. It's in our studios now, ready to be mailed out to you. It's called The Food Mood Body Connection, Nutrition-Based Environmental Approaches to Mental Health and Physical Well-Being, for a pledge of $125. And I'll tell you a little bit about the other package that we're offering as well in a minute. But the main thing that we want to put forward for you this afternoon and throughout the drive is the support of the station so that we can continue bringing you programs like Natural Living without any kind of interference. This is a listener-sponsored radio station. Has been so for over 40 years, and Natural Living has been a part of this radio station for 23 years, centrally located, and we want to continue that tradition here at WBAI. So we'd like to hear from you now. You can call us at 212-209-2950. Also, just out in paperback, the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing by Gary Null, a comprehensive A to Z listing of common and chronic illnesses and their proven natural treatments with over about 75 conditions that patient and treatment experiences, as well conditions from ranging from aging and alcoholism to breast cancer, candidiasis and cancer, to ear infections and eating disorders, to menopause, A to Z, the A to Z listing of common and chronic illnesses and their natural treatments. You may have heard about this book a couple of years ago when it first came out. It did very, very well then. Then it is now in paperback, and for a pledge of $100, if you didn't get the book then, or you got the book and you would like to get it for someone else in your family, you will recognize how valuable it was to you when you used it and when you shared it with others, and you'd like to do the same now. You can call, get the book, and share it with someone in your office or someone in your family, and support the radio station that brings you this program Monday through Friday from 12 to 1. And that is the most important thing that you can do to support Natural Living. Regular subscription to WBAI is $50. If you're a student or senior citizen, $25. If you can afford that, that would be just fine. If you can come down to the radio station and help answer phones, which are ringing now at 212-209-2950, please come down. We're at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor. You take the 2 or the number 3 train and get off at Wall Street and walk east, the last building on the left-hand side of the street, and come up to the 10th floor and help us answer phones. We really do need folks early in the morning, but if you can come down now, that would be fine if you have some time doing it.
Michael, one of the things I like to do is show people how the information in the books can help them. The books are the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing with over 75 different conditions and really good quality information. In fact, you might want to read some of the information to them just to show them how user-friendly it is and how in-depth it is. But there's nothing that can replace a person's personal experience. And joining us on the air now for a moment is Marcia Caspi. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
Marcia, how old are you?
I will tell you this time. I just turned 74 in September.
All right. This is for all the baby boomers who have parents in their 70s and 80s. And this is for all the senior citizens in their 70s and 80s who don't believe that you can fundamentally change how you feel and how your body responds. Marcia, you've used the information from the protocols and the FooMoo Body Connection and the Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. Tell us what has changed because of that.
Well, at first, my hair was falling out to great degrees, and the roots were white, and my hair is thick. Very little hair falls out when I wash it. The roots now are black. The hair is thicker. It even got curly again. And I lost 25 pounds. And as you saw, you might have noticed at the dance, I can wear clothes that are figure-hugging now. I went through menopause at 56, and my reproductive organs at that time were dry. Now they're self-lubricating. And the pubic hairs and the hair under the arms diminish after menopause, and they're growing back now. The intensity of my sexual experience, I hesitate to say this, is back where it was when I was 30. You know, that's something that should entice senior citizens. I sleep less, and this summer I went on juice cleansing for at least 3 months and felt wonderful. I like to do that during the summer so that my immune system is stronger during the winter months.
Or just so people understand, she's not saying that she only took juice. It's just a primary part of her program was juicing, where a lot of people don't use juice at all. Now, Marcia, so let's just review what you've said up to this point. You have more energy. Your libido is back to where it was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You've lost weight without dieting.
Uh-huh.
You can now fit into a form-fitted dress where you hadn't.
Right.
Your muscle tone is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Human growth hormone is being stimulated. Estrogen is being stimulated. I don't think men in the audience have any understanding what occurs in a woman's body and takes it for granted, because we never see our mothers or aunts or grandmothers ever getting younger. No one ever likes to think of their mothers having sex. It's just not something we think about it. We don't even want to think about it. But there's no reason that people shouldn't enjoy a healthy and happy and vital sex life. And yet some women have a great deal of difficulty doing it because the mucous membranes of the vagina do not lubricate. So normal intercourse or stimulation can be extremely painful and chafing and cause ulcerations. And most of the women I interview, and when they're going over their basic background physiologically, they talk about the mucous membranes. But remember, the vagina is only one part of the mucous membranes. You also see the lips drying out, the mucus in the mouth diminishing. Now, what happens when the mucus in the mouth diminishes? Bad. Bacteria multiply. Because your mucus, your saliva, has antibodies. Your first line of defense is in your mouth, is with antibodies in your saliva. So as senior citizens diminish their saliva, they increase the likelihood of upper respiratory tract infections, sinus infections, and throat infections. The muscles start to atrophy. The musculoskeletal system starts to droop. Normally, most women between the ages of 40 and 70 shrink 1 to 3 inches. They generally get some curvature of the spine. Hair starts to thin out and turn gray. And that's irreversible. Vision is diminished. Energy is diminished. And what happens in our society is we adapt to that. We simply stop doing things we once did. Stop having sex. Stop going dancing. And then most of the time do passive things like television or reading, talking on the phone. It all reversed. Everything in Marcia reversed. She's got black hair again. She's got full hair. She reversed her balding and graying. Her muscle mass is back. Her libido is back. Her energy is back. Her local aches and pains are back. Her body skeletal system is growing again. What else?
What else? Well, I've completed a work for a seminar called Love Sex, and that I'm going to try to present at the Open Center, Learning Center, with students. Because in my almost 20 years of therapeutic practice, which is short-term self-help, it's not the old therapy, and I realize that people are so concerned with relationships, and that the realization that the total relationship is sex, how you talk and how you share emotions and feelings and thoughts are it's all one. It's all a unit. So that's how come I developed this program. And my practice of true Buddhism correlates with your protocol. I'm a Nichiren Shoshu Buddhist, and that enables me to maintain the balance between body and mind and allows me the wisdom to maintain harmony with the universe. And this whole existence, this whole unity of functioning with your program and with what I'm doing, is just amazing in what it can accomplish. And people should not think that they're getting older. and women should not be concerned about their age because men of quality will seek out women of quality.
Well, that's for sure. This morning I was in the health food store getting some produce, and a fellow came up to me. I'm going to guess he was around 40, 42 years of age. And he was kind of a stout fellow, meaning you could tell that he used weights. Pretty well-defined shoulders and arms, chest. And he said, Gary, hey, just want to say thanks. I said, for what? He said, leans over and whispers in my ear, man, I can have sex now. And I said, as compared, he said, well, for about 7 years, I had trouble maintaining an erection. I got so anxious about it that I didn't want to get the Viagra stuff because I knew there were side effects. And I heard you mention, you know, that a lot of people die from that, but it scared me. So he said, I was very conscious of what I wasn't doing. I was building my body, had a strong body, but I just didn't have that inner energy. And he said, I followed your protocols. I saw you on PBS and started on your protocols. By the way, the same protocols that are in the Encyclopedia of Natural Healing and in the Food Move Body Connection. And he said it took about 7 months. And then he said one day I woke up in the morning and I had a morning erection. Well, a lot of guys wake up with a morning erection and after they urinate, the erection goes down. And he said, he was telling me that after he urinated, it didn't go down. And he thought, what is this? And like a half hour later, he's walking around with this erection. And I said, well, you could use it as tie rack, you know, and wear it on a subway and nobody would notice. And he looks at me, he didn't understand my humor. And he says, no, you got to understand. He says, before, I was always kind of prematurely ejaculating because I was afraid to go soft. And so I made it, you know, it made me very nervous. And I could tell my female friend was very frustrated by the fact I couldn't sustain it. And by the way, that's a very common situation with many men. They cannot sustain. He said, now I can go for an hour, 2 hours. And hold my erection the whole time, foreplay, all of it. He said, it works. It works. Now, he's in his early 40s, fit but not healthy, and didn't have the energy. A lot of things happen when we open up our energy pathways, start taking in the nutrients and foods that energize us in the right way. So it's more than just losing weight. It's more than being fit. It's being energized, opening our chi. So he I met this morning, Marcia's on the phone now, and just think of what your life would have been like had you not made these changes, Marcia. Think of the things you wouldn't be doing today. You wouldn't be doing this class on sex. Right?
Say that again?
I mean, if you hadn't made these changes, you wouldn't be doing this class on sex.
Exactly.
And you wouldn't be out doing dancing?
Yes.
And, right?
Yes.
I mean, you'd be like most 74-year-olds. You'd be looking at each day of how to get through the day with minimum suffering.
Well, every day is just so amazingly beautiful because the prospect of the new things that are happening and the new challenges are just absolutely delightful.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. I just wanted you to be on so that a lot of people out there who have not been able to pull their life together in the right way. Either they haven't had the resources, the tools, the motivation, or the support, or just the desire. You have. And all it takes is one person to show you can do it. And that means everyone can do it if they choose. Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you.
Bye. That's Marcia Caspi, 74 years of age, with the sexual energy and drive of a 30-year-old. And enjoying her life. Not afraid of death, not afraid of getting older. Because she's not. She's reversing it. And her perspective, hence, has changed. Your perspective can change about your health, your illnesses, your disease, if you realize you can surrender them. You can give